All right, so today we're diving into something pretty fascinating, a memoir that spans continents and generations.
Oh, this is gonna be good.
Yeah, it's excerpts from Dreams from My Father.
Okay.
It's, you know, intensely personal, but at the same time it just has these echoes of themes that, you know, I think we all grapple with, right? Family, race, identity, belonging, you
Yeah,
know.
absolutely. And what strikes me about the story is how, even though it is so intimate, it also reflects how these larger historical forces can shape our lives, sometimes without us even realizing it.
You know, it really makes you think how much of the path that we're on is really our own choices and how much is, you know, shaped by family history, the things that have come before us.
Right. It's like we're all carrying these invisible threads from the past.
Yeah.
So the author, he starts his story in Hawaii, raised by his white mother and grandparents after his Kenyan father leaves when he's only 2 years old.
And this is where we meet Gramps, right? This larger-than-life figure loves to tell stories.
Oh, yeah.
He moves his family from the Midwest all the way to Hawaii, looking for a clean slate, a fresh start, you know? And his relationship with race is really complex. It really comes through in the stories he tells.
It makes you wonder if that search for reinvention, if that's something that got passed down, because the author definitely goes on his own journey to kind of figure himself out. But before we get there, we got to talk about his time in Indonesia. Imagine this: a young boy thrown into this totally different culture, new language, new customs, just a whole new way of seeing the world.
Yeah, and one of the stories that really struck me from that time was, you know, his stepfather, Lolo, teaching him how to box. It's not just about learning how to fight. It's like Lolo's trying to instill this toughness in him, right? This way of facing the world head on, not showing any emotion.
Right, almost like armor, you know, preparing him for a world that might not always be welcoming, and you see how that clashes with his mom's worldview, right?
Right.
She has a very different idea of what it means to be safe, what risks are okay to take, especially for a mixed race child.
And there's that scene, I think you mentioned it earlier, where he comes home after a fight, you know, with a muddy sock wrapped around his arm, like a makeshift bandage. And his mom is just, you can just feel her relief, but also this terror, right?
Absolutely, like a microcosm of that whole tension between two cultures, two ways of seeing the world.
And that tension just carries right through to his teenage years back in Hawaii, where his racing identity really becomes like this central focus.
Makes sense, right? Going from Indonesia back to the US.
Yeah. And he's going to this prestigious school, Punahou School, and he's really struggling to fit in, to reconcile who he is with where he is. And it's like he's hitting those universal questions of belonging head on.
Totally. He becomes so aware of his race and how it sets him apart, even in a place like Hawaii, which you think of as this melting pot.
Yeah. And then there's that story of Coretta, the girl he pushes away. He's attracted to her, but he's terrified of rejection.
Oh, I remember that.
And especially because of his race.
It's heartbreaking because it shows how much he's internalized, like the racism he's encountered. He wants connection, but he's so afraid of being vulnerable, of confirming the very stereotypes he's trying to fight against.
And right in the middle of all this, his father comes to visit from Kenya. It's this brief but really intense encounter, full of mixed emotions. It's almost like a ghost from the past just reappearing.
Exactly. And that visit kind of shatters the image he'd built up in his head, the image he had of his father, based on stories and longing.
Yeah, he's forced to confront the reality of who his father is, the flaws and all. And then college hits, and we see this political awakening. He goes from apathy to activism, starts speaking out against injustice.
Like a switch flips, right? He's exposed to new ideas, new ways of thinking. He starts questioning the status quo, those systems that just keep perpetuating inequality.
Yeah, and it's at this point where we meet Ray and Malik, these two friends who both challenge and support his evolving views. Ray kind of represents this pragmatic, almost cynical approach to racial politics, you know? He thinks you got to play the game, work within the system.
Yeah, play by the rules, even if they're rigged.
Right. But then you've got Malik, who's this black nationalist, sees white society as inherently oppressive. And the author is caught between these two really different perspectives, trying to forge his own path.
It's like he's being pulled in two different directions, right?
Totally. And after college, he makes this surprising choice. He decides to become a community organizer in Chicago. I mean, you'd think after all this, he'd choose something more traditional, more financially secure, but no. He wants to work with churches, residents in these neighborhoods that are often neglected.
Yeah.
He wants to make a real difference to empower people who've been marginalized.
It's a pivotal moment, right? It shows where his heart really lies.
Yeah, and it's in Chicago that he meets Marty.
Oh, Marty.
This seasoned organizer who becomes his mentor. And Marty's fascinating because he's incredibly practical, teaches him the nuts and bolts of organizing, but he also really emphasizes self-interest as like the main driver behind why people get involved in their community.
Which rubs the author the wrong way, right?
Yeah.
Because he wants to believe that people are motivated by more than just their own self-interest.
Exactly. He's idealistic, right? He wants to believe in genuine change, not just these power plays.
And you can see how those beliefs get challenged when he starts working in Altgeld Gardens.
Right. This housing project battling poverty, neglect, just layers and layers of systemic issues. And he's seeing the challenges these residents face firsthand, the complexities of trying to navigate these competing interests and how to challenge these power structures. It's mechie work.
It's not glamorous, that's for sure.
No, but there are victories, like that campaign for a new MET intake center in Roseland.
Right, those small wins that keep you going.
But even those wins are followed by new challenges, you know. He wants to see immediate results, but he's learning that real change takes time. It's a marathon, not a sprint.
Exactly. And right in the middle of all of this work, he decides to go to Kenya.
Yeah.
Like he's been on this internal journey and now needs to ground it in something real, something tangible. He needs to connect with his father's family, his roots.
And with the help of Amma, his half-sister, he meets all these relatives.
Right.
Granny, his paternal grandmother, Zaituni, his aunt, his half-brothers, Roy, Bernard, and Mark. And each one of these encounters kind of offers a piece of his father's story.
It's beautiful and heartbreaking at the same time, right? He's embraced by this family he's never known, but he also sees their struggles, the impact that colonialism continues to have on their lives.
Yeah, and through their stories, he's able to confront those complex feelings about his father, this man that he barely knew, but who's had this enormous presence in his life.
And the visit to his father's grave is just, it's a turning point.
It is.
It's like a reckoning with his father's legacy, the good and the bad.
And it's a profound moment of catharsis, right? He weeps for the lost opportunities, for the pain that's been passed down through generations, but he also finds a sense of peace, of acceptance, of understanding.
Yeah.
And it's there that he realizes his story is inseparable from his father's story, from his family's history, from these larger forces that have shaped both Kenya and America. And that realization, it's both liberating and challenging, you know?
I so.
Where it frees him from the burden of expectation, but it also forces him to confront the complexities of his own identity. Who is he? Where does he belong? And these are questions that stay with him as he returns to America
Yeah.
with a newfound sense of purpose, a deeper understanding of himself and his place in the world.
But also, I'd imagine a greater awareness of the challenges that still lie ahead, right?
Oh, absolutely. The struggle for justice, for equality, the need to bridge these divides, to build a more just society, these are the things that are going to shape his future, take him far beyond the streets of Chicago.
And that's a story for another time, I guess.
Exactly. We'll dive into that in part two.
But it wasn't like, he just came back to America and forgot about everything he experienced in Kenya.
Right.
It's like those themes of family, identity, belonging, those things just kept playing out in his life in Chicago.
It's almost like he brought a piece of Kenya back with him, you know?
Absolutely. And one thing that really stands out is this tension he wrestles with, between individual ambition and collective responsibility. He has this drive to succeed, to make something of himself, but at the same time, he feels so connected to the people he's working with, to the struggles they're facing.
Right. Like, how do you balance those two things? Your own aspirations with the needs of your community, you know?
Exactly. And that dilemma comes to life in the story of Johnny, a young man the author meets while working in Roseland.
Ah, Johnny.
This kid is smart, capable, but just trapped in this cycle of poverty and violence.
Yeah, he just embodies both the potential and the fragility of hope in these communities, you know? He wants a better life, but there are just so many obstacles in his way, all these systemic forces working against him.
And the author, he sees himself in Johnny, tries to mentor him, encourage him to believe in a different future.
But there's also this growing awareness that his own path, his opportunities, they're just different from Johnny's, right?
Right. He has advantages, education, family support, a network, things that Johnny just doesn't have access to.
And I think that leads to a kind of reckoning, right? Like, what does success really mean? What does it mean to be part of a community? What does it mean to be Black in America?
Those are some big questions, man.
They are. And they're not just questions for the author, right? I think we all grapple with them regardless of our background.
Yeah, for sure.
how do we define success? Is it about individual achievement, or is it something more?
Mm-hmm.
Is it about lifting others up as we climb, or is it about forging our own path, even if it means leaving some people behind?
You know, one of the things I appreciate about this memoir is that it doesn't offer easy answers.
No.
It's honest, it's insightful, and it really challenges you to think.
And that's the power of personal stories, right?
Yeah.
It can connect us to these larger issues, help us see the world through different eyes, challenge our assumptions, inspire us to work towards something better.
Absolutely. And as we wrap up this deep dive into Dreams from My Father, I keep coming back to how, you know, understanding the author's journey, his struggles, his triumphs, his search for belonging, how all of that can inspire us to think differently about our own lives,
yeah,
about our communities, our place in the world.
It's a powerful reminder that our own stories, they're woven into these larger forces, right?
Right.
They shape not just our individual paths, but the very fabric of our society.
It encourages us to ask those tough questions, to challenge the status quo, to never give up hope for a more just and equitable future for everyone.
So as we move on to part three, think about this. How does the author's journey resonate with your own? How does his search for identity and belonging inspire you to act, to make a difference in your own community?
It's interesting, though, because his trip to Kenya wasn't just about family, you know?
No, it was about confronting that legacy of colonialism, that really complicated relationship between Africa and the West.
And you really see that in his encounters with tourists in Nairobi, you know?
Yeah.
They're fascinated by the wildlife, the culture, but there's also this detachment, like they're observing from a distance.
Right, almost like it's a show put on just for them.
And Ama, his half-sister, she's really critical of that kind of tourism, you know?
Rightfully so.
She sees it as exploitative,
mm-hmm,
another form of Western dominance.
Yeah.
And it forces the author to really think about his own role. You know, he's an outsider, an American, returning to this land where his ancestors came from.
It's like he's caught between two worlds.
Exactly.
Trying to reconcile his American identity with his Kenyan heritage.
And that tension just gets amplified when he visits his father's ancestral village, Alego.
Ah, Alego.
It's this rural community, far removed from the hustle and bustle of Nairobi.
And it's there that he really starts to piece together his family's story.
It is, and he meets Granny, his paternal grandmother.
Granny.
She's just this incredible woman.
Oh, you know, she sounds amazing.
She embodies the resilience of Kenya's history, but also the pain.
Yeah.
She tells him about the arrival of the British, the struggle for independence, how traditional family structures were just torn apart.
Her story is just so powerful because it's not just personal. It's a window into those larger forces that shaped Kenya in the 20th century.
Exactly. And she also reveals some surprising things about the author's grandfather, Onyango.
Oh.
He was a cook for the British.
Wow.
Then he became a successful farmer, but he was also a very complex figure,
mm-hmm,
capable of both great generosity and cruelty.
A product of his time, you might say.
You could say that.
Yeah. And there's that one story, I don't know if you remember this, but it's about how the author's father was separated from his own mother when he was just a boy.
Oh, yeah, it's heartbreaking.
It is, but it also shows how colonialism, these forces of modernity, just ripped families and communities apart.
It's a reminder of the human cost of these historical events, you know?
It is, and when you hear that story, you start to understand the author's father in a new light.
Mm.
His rebellious nature, his intelligence, those struggles to find his place in a world that was changing so rapidly.
It's clear he was brilliant, ambitious,
yeah,
but also deeply flawed.
Struggling with those inner demons, the weight of expectation.
Yeah, and this is where the author's personal journey really intersects with those larger themes we've been talking about. The search for identity, the complexities of family, trying to reconcile your own aspirations with the needs of those around you.
And that visit to his father's grave, it becomes this pivotal moment.
It does.
A reckoning with his father's legacy, the good and the bad.
It's a powerful moment of emotional catharsis.
Yeah.
He's weeping for the lost opportunities, for the pain that's been passed down through generations. But he also finds a sense of peace, acceptance, understanding.
He realizes his story is inseparable from his father's, from his family's history, from those forces that shaped both Kenya and America.
And that realization, it's both liberating and challenging.
How so?
Well, it frees him from the burden of expectation.
Okay.
But it also forces him to confront the complexities of his own identity, you know?
Who he is, where he belongs.
Exactly.
Big questions.
And he returns to America with this newfound sense of purpose,
mm-hmm,
a deeper understanding of himself and his place in the world.
But also, I imagine, a greater awareness of the challenges that still lie ahead, right?
Absolutely. The ongoing struggle for justice and equality, the need to bridge divides and build a more just society.
And his time in Chicago, it wasn't just about community organizing.
Yeah.
It was about learning, observing, understanding those complexities of power, race, and class in America.
He encountered such a wide range of people, activists, politicians, pastors, residents of struggling neighborhoods.
All with their own perspectives, hopes, and frustrations.
And he learned that change is often incremental. Progress can be painfully slow.
Yeah.
There are no easy answers to complex social problems.
But he also learned the importance of listening.
Right.
Building relationships, finding common ground, never giving up hope.
Those experiences in Chicago, they were invaluable.
They were.
They shaped his worldview and prepared him for the challenges that lay ahead.
And they laid the foundation for a journey that would ultimately make history.
And on that note, we come to the end of our deep dive into Dreams from My Father.
You know, it's been a fascinating exploration of family, identity, and the search for belonging. Themes that resonate across cultures and generations.
It's a reminder that our personal stories, they're always intertwined with those larger forces of history and society.
And that understanding our own stories, where we come from, can empower us to create a more just and equitable world for everyone.
So we leave you with this. How does the author's journey inspire you to think differently about your own life, your own community, your own place in the world?
What will your story be?